something that I think a lot of people talk about in mental health, that we talk about, you know, the only way out is through. And so embracing where you are, the acceptance can then bring you to a point of grace, right? And then from there, you can move forward. You can advance the ball.
Welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast, where deep, meaningful, and philosophical conversations about golf and life are par for the course. My name is Chris Lynch. If you want to be part of our community, a community which shares a love for golf and a desire to support each other to live happier, healthier, and more fulfilled lives, then use the Substack link provided in the show notes to subscribe for free to become our latest community member and get free access to member-only content, including a full video version of this episode, as well as monthly journal articles written by myself and exclusive discounts with partner golf brands. Today's guest is Celina Samuela, Peloton instructor and certified Titleist Performance Institute golf fitness coach. As a Peloton superfan myself, I was really excited to welcome Celina onto the podcast, not least because she loves golf, but also for the chance to pick her brains on all things health, fitness, and nutrition. Some of you may know that Celina has recently taken her love of the game to the Peloton Studio, having created a golf fitness program which was a first of its kind for Peloton and helps golfers to build strength with a particular focus on stability, explosive power, and improved range of motion. We discuss that fitness program during this episode, as well as Celina's holistic advice as it relates to fitness and how we can enjoy peak performance both on and off the golf course. Of course, in true GYH style, we also dabble in plenty of metaphorical chat about the synergies between golf and life and what this beautiful game teaches us about overcoming adversity and building resilience. As you'll hear, Celina is a great conversationalist and a really warm person to talk to. So it was my sincere pleasure and privilege to have her on the show, and I'm certain you're going to love this episode. Without any further ado, let's tee off and jump into the conversation. So Celina Samuela, firstly, welcome to Golf Yourself Healthy. I cannot tell you how pumped and stoked I am to have this conversation. Been looking forward to this one for a while now. So I always like to have a habit of checking in with my guests first and foremost. So how are you doing? How are you feeling today, Celina?
Thank you. It's so nice to be here. And likewise, I'm also pumped and stoked to have this chat with you. I'm feeling great. I'm in Florida. It's a sunny day. It's like 78 degrees. I can't complain.
Fantastic. Well, it's a bit of a far cry from what it's like here in the UK at the moment. But I'm sure things will look up soon enough. And yeah, so Celina, I feel like a good place to start is let's just talk a bit about your golf, first of all. You know, golf, if I read right, so have you taken it up in more recent times? Did I read somewhere that it was kind of like a pandemic thing for you? Is that right?
I'm totally a pandemic golfer. So that, like, big increase in participants during the pandemic, that's me. I'm that person. I swung a club for the first time in 2019. And that's when I met my now husband. He was my boyfriend at the time. And he was just, you know, he was a very passionate golfer. And I really didn't understand how obsessed with golf he was at the time, you know, because I didn't understand the obsession that golfers have with the sport. You know, you think, okay, someone plays golf and you're like, okay, that's cool. But it's like, it's not a normal hobby. When you get into this and you really get into this, it's like a really big part of your personality. So I swung a club for the first time in 2019, and like I kind of casually went to Chelsea Piers with him, and I was like, oh, this is fun, whatever. Then when the pandemic happened, we kind of were forced to start living together. Like, that's when I realized, I was like, oh, this is serious. This is like really like what he does all the time. And we ended up living at his parents' house in Westchester, New York, and they lived on a golf course. So it was kind of like the natural thing to do. Like, I had access to this golf course. I would just go out there and play on the par three by myself. And, you know, I just figured it out and I became really obsessed with it myself.
Love it.
That's awesome. Yeah. And then, you know,
love
history.
To hear that. Familiar story. And I just want to lift the hood on that even a little bit more, just because I've had a few listeners, friends, whatever, kind of that listen, write to me and say, for example, the guys out there will say, Chris, my wife really doesn't get it. She doesn't understand what it is about golf, right? And so I'm just curious, because you've just said, from what I'm hearing, there was a point in time where equally you were just like, I don't get it, but what is it about golf? And then it got you. So, like,
yeah.
How do you reflect back on the pre-golf Selena and the post-golf Selena? What have you learned?
That is such a good point. I think there's, like, kind of two things I want to say about that. So I think the first thing I want to say is pre-golf Selena, I actually never saw the sport as being for me. And I think that might differ a little bit for folks in the UK versus folks in the US, because I've actually never been to the UK. I've only been to Ireland. But when I went to Ireland, what I experienced was that golf was so much a part of the culture. It's like much more egalitarian. Like the best courses are actually public courses. Mm. People that are local are members of those wonderful courses. They caddy. It's like, so it's just really ingrained in the culture. And it's like, it doesn't really matter where you're from, like economically or your status, like kind of everybody plays golf. Whereas in the U.S., growing up, you know, I moved to the U.S. when I was 10 years old. And before that, I lived in Italy. I didn't even know golf existed then, because I grew up in a small farm town and like just it didn't exist. But then when I moved to the States, I was introduced to it, but just through a lens of, this isn't for you. This is for wealthy men and actually wealthy white men. And that's just all that I saw. So it was like, okay, I just don't have access to this. It's nothing that I'll ever do. Then, you know, life went on and I became, you know, older and interested in other sports. And then I met my husband. And I still kind of was under the impression that that's what golf was about. I didn't really understand that there was an access point. I just was unaware of it. There are public courses, you know, there is a way to buy a used set of golf clubs and get out there and be a part of it. And it actually is such an asset here in the U.S., especially for a woman, to pick up the game of golf, because it's used in a lot of different ways, like in business, and it can really be beneficial for your career. You meet so many people from different places. So I'm actually really passionate about sharing about the game of golf with women specifically in this country, because I think that it can really be an asset. But so pre-Selena, I didn't think golf was for me. I didn't see myself in the sport. Then once I realized, oh, actually there is a little bit more to this, and like I can be, you know, involved in this. And I just realized that it was like so special, because it challenged me in a way that nothing else has ever challenged me. So this is going to sound maybe like little, like I'm full of myself, but generally I've been like good at sports. Like, you know, I decide I want to run and I run a marathon and I run it well. I can qualify for Boston. I surf and I can surf well. You know, I pick up snowboarding. I can generally like do things and learn them and do them well and pretty quickly. Golf was not like that. Golf was not like that at all. It didn't really matter that I was, you know, very in great physical shape or that I've been a good athlete in the past. It required so much more of me, not just my physical prowess. It required essentially a meditation practice. It required a centering. It required me to be humble. It required me to continue to show up in spite of essentially not seeing results for a long, long time. And, you know, trusting that there is like light at the end of the tunnel. So it required like a different kind of resilience, not the physical kind of resilience that, you know, you need when, you know, an endurance, right? When you're running a marathon, or the physical kind of endurance I needed to stay in the fight when I was boxing. It required a actually kind of a similar experience. Boxing, you're getting punched in the face, but golf, you're getting like emotionally punched in the face.
So, constantly, every time you play. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just, I just felt like it was a really, it was teaching me life lessons in a way that I thought was really special. And then the reward was really wonderful when you do start seeing results. You're like, oh my God, like, I can't believe, like, you know, that something about that feeling, it's almost indescribable. Like the feeling of when you connect and you compress the ball and it goes where you want it to go. I don't know. It's just like,
I know, it's incredible. It's just so unique, isn't it? It's just so truly unique. And I think you've articulated that so well there. I'm going to go straight to, I said to you a moment ago before we went on air, how your Instagram page, your social media is a treasure trove of inspirational content and quotes and perspectives and reflections. And one very recent one that you put out there about golf was your four top truths about golf. And I'm gonna read them out for the listener's benefit here, right, Selena? And I'm gonna major on number three and number four. So you said, number one, you're on your own journey. Don't compare. Focus on your own game, not anyone else's. Love it. Couldn't agree more. We talk about that regularly here. Number two, keep your expectations in check. It's better to be pleasantly surprised than disappointed. Number three, focus on what's within your control. Don't let a bad lie or a shitty bounce get the best of you. Your next shot is always the most important one, so make sure one bad shot doesn't turn into a second. Amen to that. And number four, stay in the present and try to remember the immense privilege it is to be, to just be where you are, doing what you're doing. And I responded to you on that, and I said, here at Golf Yourself Healthy, our strapline that I kind of start and finish every episode with, and is all over our content, is embrace the rough and cherish the fairway. Grounded in the belief, in my personal experience of how, you know, adversity has shaped my life. You mentioned the word resilience a minute ago. So I wanted your, you know, your response both then when I replied to you and now tells me, you know, that you get that. What is that, when you hear that, what does that mean to you? Embrace the rough and cherish the fairway.
Oh, I love that. You know, I think, embrace the rough and cherish the fairway. I don't want to answer too quickly because like maybe something will come to me.
Sit with it. Just take as long as you need.
Embrace the rough and cherish the fairway. Yeah, I think, you know, something that it may sound cliche, but something that I think a lot of people talk about in mental health, that we talk about, you know, the only way out is through. Mm. And, you know, when we land in the rough or we're in the sand or in a, you know, or even metaphorically in life, like, when you're in the rough, you can't go back in time, you know, like as much as we may want to, it's not like something that we can physically do. And so embracing where you are, the acceptance can then bring you to a point of grace, right? Because you have to. And then from there, you can move forward in a way that, in a way that's, you know, you can positively move forward. You can advance the ball. Because living in the anger or living in the, you know, is only, then you're still staying in the past. You're still staying in the rough, essentially.
Well, exactly, right. Because if you, yeah, to play on this even more, like the chances are if you just stay in that, just kind of bathe in that anger and that resentment, then the chances are the next shot you hit is probably going to end, you know, you might not get out the rough. So, you know, it's trying to channel that adversity into, okay, how can I use this to become stronger?
Absolutely. And I think also something you just touched on too, it's like you said you might not make it out of the rough. Well, yeah, you might not in either scenario, but like, so you have a choice, right? So you could approach it and be, you know, so angry and feel terrible about being in the rough or being in the sand and hit your shot in anger. Or you can choose to hit your shot with some grace and some semblance of acceptance. And it's like, well, which one, you know, and which one would you rather choose? Would you rather choose to feel, you know, less angry? Or would you rather choose to feel, so it's like, you're still in the same spot.
Totally. And you mentioned mental health a second ago, and you make me think about how, so if in the golf context, again, the traps, the sand, the rough are typically those areas that most golfers want to avoid. Okay. But if you then bring this back to mental health, we all have mental health, and some people, men especially, are known for avoiding talking about it, let's say, for example. But it's almost like we don't want that adversity. Like, we're almost worried that by putting ourselves in the rough, and that in this mental health context is talking about it, will bring you down. But you almost have to, the point here is you have to endure that adversity to actually learn from it and become better for it, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, like, you know, the better you get at weird lies and sand shots or whatever, like, the better chances you have of being able to not be worried about it once you do end up in those places. Yes. And then sometimes it's kind of fun too. Like, you know, I don't know, like, when my husband has a super long drive, and sometimes that long drive can be errant and it puts him in weird places. But then what's really cool is that, like, he's also gotten so good at trick shot. He's a, like, a zero, he's a scratch, and sometimes he goes below. He's a plus sometimes. So he's very good, but he's gotten so amazing at, like, shaping shots. And, like, the only way that he's gotten amazing at that is from literally being in precarious situations on the golf course. You know, if every drive or if every shot was perfect, then he would never need the practice. He would never need to have learned to do those really cool, you know, to shape shots that way. And it's so fun to watch. And I'm sure it's fun to play that way too, you know, like,
yeah.
If every shot was that way, then maybe completely. You'd be stressed out. But it's kind of cool when you're like, oh, all right, I'm going to try to, like, I have to get it through these trees. And then I need to kind of, like, you know, shape it so that it lands on the green, and the green is all the way. There's completely. A dog leg left or whatever, you know, whatever it is. It's like, it's cool.
I think there's, extending this even further, I think there's almost something there, using your husband's example of when – I've talked to a few people on this podcast, let's say in particular, like, psychologists or golf coaches who work with elite professionals, and this idea about how even the top professionals, they have mental health and they have to embrace the rough too. So in your husband's case, just because he's an amazing golfer, like, everyone, like, none of us are immune from these challenges of life and mental health. And right. So, and it's totally. Important. We always remember that and don't needlessly have people on a pedestal that, you know, they're human beings too. Right. So
totally. I also think another cool metaphor too with that is that, like, okay, so, you know, you have to have been in the rough quite a few times to be able to, like, learn these cool trick shots or to be able to shape shots. But also sometimes there is no outlet and you have to take your medicine and just chip your ball back to the fairway, no matter who you are. Sometimes that, like, you know what I mean? So I think that also is another thing that's so cool about golf, is that it humbles everybody. It doesn't matter how great you get at the game. Like, exactly. You know, sometimes you get a bad break.
Exactly right. Love it. I feel I could go on for days with this, but we're not going to. Let's move on and sort of I love the metaphorical chat, and I want to move it on to speaking about you know, so your background and your professional work in the fitness industry. You know, I read something. Well, actually, do you know my discovery of, as I said to you before, Selena, I'm a diehard Peloton. Is there a nickname for people that use Peloton, by the way?
I don't know. Pelotoner. Maybe like Peloton members, Pelotoners. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I'll go with Pelotoner. I've just made it up right now. But so let me share with you the kind of the the moment of inspiration I had when, you know, so I'm just in there in my little home gym and I've got my TV on and I'm sort of thinking, I want to do a strength class, or let's do something, you know, just go through, scroll through the menu in Peloton, and up flashes Selena Samuela golf program. I'm like, say what now? You know, and I'm thinking, wow, okay. And so then I went and I read an article, I think it was golf.com, that you were interviewed in. And essentially, if I'm not mistaken, what I read there was, this is the first time that Peloton have put out a program that is for a specific sport. Is that right?
Yeah, it was the first one. We have a few more now. I think they had a strength for skiers that just launched. I think they did one for soccer. But I think golf really resonated with people because, you know, with golf, so many people play golf and are so passionate about it versus, like, you know, it's just one of those things that, like, you never give up and you can do it into your old age and you can progress in different ways. No matter what, you know, no matter how old you get or what happens with your body, there's still ways around it. And that's something I learned in TPI, is that, you know, everybody has their own individual swing and there are some things mechanically that your body won't be able to do, but you can find ways around it and you can find ways to build a swing that makes sense for you. Okay. And so that's why I think, you know, golf sticks around. That's why it's like, you know, like my husband's grandfather who passed away last year, but he was, you know, in his late 80s playing golf.
How many other sports?
Yes, exactly.
Let's again, you know, there'll be plenty of my listeners that recognize you, that, you know, probably attend your Peloton classes and stuff, but there'll be others who don't or are unfamiliar with you. So maybe can you tell us a bit about, like, what's your kind of area of subject matter expertise as it relates to fitness? Like, what are your areas you cover?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in, you know, I think the thing that's most important to me, especially now that I've become a mother, is thinking about what we need to do to kind of to make it so that we can stick around longer for our kiddos, you know, and not just stick around and just be kind of like passively there, but really be active participants in their life. So I think my number one passion is really, when I'm thinking about fitness, I think about health and I think about longevity. And so, you know, kind of doing the things that make sense for us to, when we're thinking about optimizing for, you know, bone health, muscle retention, cognitive function, and those types of things. But then I also have this other passion, because I am so passionate about my hobbies and especially golf, that, and I do recognize that it is something that we can do really, like, for kind of forever. I really do find a lot of fulfillment teaching this type of fitness that is geared towards specifically improving your hobbies, improving your sports, whether it's running or golf. And there are so many things that you can do in strength that can support your swing or support your athletic endeavors.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you about running then, because that is very much one of those core areas that you cover, and people will, you know, be able to attend your classes in Peloton, say, for example. So I love running. What I love about it is, what it does for me is in here, right? The mental health benefits of running for me. Same. Again, much like my golf, I don't consider myself, I'm not a fast runner. I just do it to blow off the cobwebs and just cut through those black clouds or gray clouds or whatever. And when I've done like a 5K, whatever it is, a three mile run on a Saturday with my dog, at the end of it, I'm like, oh, you know, it was hard for me to get out of bed and haul my ass over there and do it, but I'm so glad I did.
Yeah.
And I guess, yeah. What is running to you then? Tell us about your running.
Honestly, it's very similar. So running has always been kind of supplemental with any sport that I was an amateur boxer before I became a Peloton instructor, and running was such a huge part of our, like, training process. So it always was supplemental, at least when it came to sport, like, I never was a competitive runner in the past. But I've just always felt so good at doing it. And like, you really described it perfectly. It really is almost meditational. Sometimes I like to run with music and just like kind of go ham. But a lot of times I'll even take the headphones out and just focus on breathing. And it's just kind of my like zen. I'm not very good at just sitting still when I meditate. It doesn't really work. I don't know. I've tried so much. And I'm sure if I practice more, I could get better. But I've found a way to do it in running. And I think, you know, it could be considered certainly a mindful practice that way, where it's like really focusing on breath and cadence and stride and nothing else. And that's just, you know, you get to kind of clear your mind that way. And yeah, I love the endorphin high. I'm an addict when it comes to that. Like there's something about that, that is just so wonderful. And I guess, going back to fitness, like, you know, there are ways to work out and to train to ensure that you kind of can stay healthy to continue to do those things for a longer period of time. And that's why if you take my classes, you see me teaching a lot of unilateral work, offsetting, things that really focus on balance and stability, because those are things that are going to benefit you long term when it comes to these kind of hobbies and extracurriculars, including running, including golf. But it's also just so, it's also good for, you know, functionally when you think about the things that we're doing day to day. It's, we're not like working on one plane, you know, we're usually moving in multiple planes.
Definitely. As far as running is concerned, and any relationship, if there is one, between it and golf, I mean, how, in your mind, could you see golf and running coexisting together? If anyone out there is listening to this, who's like, you know, I really love both things, how can they live in perfect harmony? Is there like an overlap in terms of muscles or do you get what I mean?
Oh yeah, totally. I think I just touched on it a little bit. I think, you know, running is single leg work, you know? And golf is a lot about balance and stability. So there surely are benefits. Also, I mean, the easiest one is the endurance that you naturally accumulate as a runner is going to help you on the course, especially if you're walking courses. And I know a lot of courses in the UK are walking courses. Absolutely. And there are quite a few here in the US as well. I'm a member of one course that's does not allow carts at all. I think, you know, that's kind of the more obvious ones, but I do think also the mental toughness stuff can definitely translate as well, especially when you get into some of the like more endurance style running, or, you know, where it's just like, ooh, like this is brutal, but I'm going to do it anyway. Yeah. That kind of thing where you're just like, or, you know, you're schlepping through around and you, I don't know about you, but for me, I'm like, oh, golf would be perfect if there were like 15 holes. Like the last three holes for me are just like so hard to get through. They're so miserable. That's when I kind of fall apart more often than not. Like, So it's just, it's hard to schlep through those last three holes. So I think like that's where like kind of running and golf can coexist. Also, I have heard, I've never participated in these, but I have heard that there are like golf running competitions where you like run. Oh. It's like speed golf. That's what it's
speed
called.
Golf. It's like speed golf. Yeah. I've been chatting on Instagram DMs, a guy called Luke Willett, who's the British number one in speed golf, and
Stop.
Watching some of his
so cool.
content is just like, wow, like just it fascinates me more than anything. Just that and maybe that's it, right? There's that combination there. It's amazing to see. What was I about to? I've lost my train of thought there. I was gonna. We'll see if it comes back to me. But that was it. What I so relate to what you say about holes 16 through 18.
Yeah, they're so brutal.
What's going on there? Like, what is that all about? I don't know, because I think for me, physically, what happens is, I mean, it's a combination of mental and physical weariness when you get there, because the legs are starting to just be a bit like feeling a bit heavy now, and especially when you're walking. And it's that trade-off, right? Because I think especially in British culture, you're right, I think over here people can get really sort of, yeah, really funny about like carts and stuff. Like, no, this is the way the game was always meant to be played and stuff, which is great. And from a health perspective, sure. But then there's that trade off against the performance aspect as well, or the scorecard, because so I don't know, like, what's your top tips? Or have you cracked the code yet as it relates to seeing it through to the end, to the 18? Yeah. What do you do on those last few holes?
Yeah, so I do think that actually, you know, working on your cardiovascular capacity is certainly a benefit to something like that, which is why I think, you know, even like doing kind of like high zone two, low zone three, cardio type workouts where, you know, you're like light jog, easy run, power walk, do that for like a longer period, like a 60 minute session, like doing that at least once a week, on top of some other more like moderate, sessions, I guess, throughout the week. I think that can be so helpful. Yeah. I mean, it's also sleep, you know, but I think the more in shape I am, certainly the more in shape I am, certainly the easier it is to kind of get through those last few holes. But I think that it's more than just the physical, right? Because it's also like very mentally draining. And
yes,
maybe if you're having a stellar round or if you're having an awesome back nine, then it's amazing how like you actually totally feel fine at hole 16. You know, you're like, oh, like I had a couple birdies. Like, what are you talking about? I could play another 18. You're feeling like really good. But so I think like there definitely is something to say about the mental aspect of like, trying to kind of, again, stay in the game and like that resilience and that kind of practice of mental toughness that comes in to those last three holes. And I think my tip there would be, I don't know, when, you know, if you want to, whatever you, the thing that you practice doing is what you're going to get good at. So if you want to get good at doing hard things, you got to do hard things. So, and I've heard Nelly Korda say this before. I think it was Nelly Korda, somebody, it was somebody on the LPGA, I think it was Nelly Korda, but she was just like, you know, one of my biggest advice to people is like when they're trying to, you know, lower their scores, it's like, get off the range, go play. You know, like get out there and play. Like, sure, of course you need your swing practice, especially if you're going through a swing change or whatever, but like get out on the course and play, and like repetition, like do the things, find yourself in these like weird, you know, situations, get, you know, be in the rough, be in the sand. The more you end up in these, put yourself in those positions, or, you know, you're really struggling through those last three holes, but you get through it anyway. The more you do that, the more it becomes like second nature, and
it's I love that. It's like replicating real life conditions, or as my golf coach puts it, like put yourself under the gun, basically try and replicate that kind of like, because range is just, it's very easy just to get into robotic, mechanical, like it's good to a point, but I totally agree with it, with that one. Even the idea that came to you, the light bulb moment that came to you for the Peloton Golf program, tell us about the origins of that then. Tell us the story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, I became really obsessed with the game in 2020, even though I, you know, started trying to do a few swings in 2019, but it was 2020 when I started and took lessons too. It was the first time I took lessons, was in 2020. And, because I had a background in fitness, I guess maybe, you know, I was looking at the sport from that perspective of like body swing mechanics and kinematic sequence was really interesting to me. Because I was interested in the body and the way the body moves. So that was something that I just like naturally was drawn to. And my coach at the time, his name's Gary Ware, also a Scottish man.
Nice.
He really, helped build my swing from the ground up and helped grow this passion for golf that I have. But he also was somebody who talked a lot about, you know, body swing mechanics and talked a lot about the kinematic sequence, and he was totally willing to like nerd out with me on those types of things. And after a while, after playing for a few years, I decided to dive a little deeper and got my certification, my TPI certification, from Titleist Performance Institute for fitness. And, you know, I had been, even before that, I'd been kind of trying it out on myself and on my husband, like guinea pigging us, like creating programs for each other to help our golf game. And really, it's not so much, I think one of the things that I want people to understand when they choose to dive into doing things in fitness, whether it's, you know, doing strength classes or mobility classes to kind of improve what their body can do. I think that we need to caution and make sure that people are also aware that, like, this is more about supporting a swing and not building a swing. The work of building a swing, you have to do that, you know, on your own, on the golf course, on the range, sure, or with a golf coach or whatever. But the thing about, you know, about golf swings is, like, and we kind of touched on this before, is that it's totally dependent on what your body can do. And so the more that your body can do, the more you can do with your swing. And so that's kind of, you know, what I think about when I'm creating these classes and whether it's mobility or strength. So it's like, let's try to be able to do more with our bodies so we can then do more with our swing. Or, you know, the other thought is, you know, avoid injury.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna take us back to the metaphorical space for a second, okay? And so, again, something, and this is my favorite of the quotes I've seen on your Instagram. I saw something where you said, if I think I quote you right, the best weight you'll ever lose is not caring about what other people think of you.
Yeah,
and I think I brought that up because I wanted to talk about weight loss, because that's an issue for me at the moment. So I'm going to talk about that, but I also want to talk about the actual meaning behind that quote that I just read.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the weight loss thing for a second, right? Because again, if I think about where I get most self-conscious, I guess, Selena, is, you know, I've always been, because I'm quite a tall guy, I'm like 6'3", I think I can hide it a bit better, but I struggle with diet. You know, I'm not in good habits at the moment. And I think when I don't feel so good about my body, you know, it does rub off in many areas of my life, but on the golf course too. So I'll be, you know, I absolutely do want to wear athletic stuff and look great and feel great, but I'm wearing baggier stuff on the golf course. And I guess maybe my question is more around, like, you know, what, aside diet, and if I'm going to get the most out of, like, my Peloton subscription, for instance, like, what are the, not the hacks, but, like, what's the best form of fitness to really tackle weight loss or fat loss or whatever?
Yeah. So that's a tough question, because I think, you know, everybody is so different. We're chemically made up differently, right? And I talk about this a lot with, like, when I talk about postpartum things, like, all of our experiences are so different. Our hormone levels are very different. Our you know, birth experience are different. And it's kind of the same for men and women, in that, like, you know, we're not talking about postpartum with men, but it's the same. It's like, you just said it, you know, you're 6'3", you're built differently. Someone else could be 5'7" or 5'9", and maybe they're, you know, shorter and have, like, always had a really easy time building muscle. And maybe someone is taller and naturally thinner and has a really hard time building muscle. And it's just, we're so different. So it really varies person to person. And this is going to sound like, you know, there's no easy answer here, essentially, on, like, sure, how to tackle fat loss. And I think some people respond to certain variables differently, and more positively than others. But there always is, like, I think diet is such a huge one, because I've been through ups and downs of, you know, weight loss journey myself, and I could even be, you know, essentially at my healthiest and be heavier and be at a point in my life where I'm not as healthy and not have as much weight. So I think, you know, if you're completely unwilling to look at nutrition, then it is important to move your body consistently. But if you, the truth is, if you want to get like snatched, as people say, I hate that term, but if you really do, if that's something that's really important to you and you want to have like the abs and the like, nutrition can't be ignored. It just can't. It's, mm-hmm. you know, unless you're like 20 and, like,
no,
you know, it's like,
I'm approaching 40 fast now. And like those 20s are a distant memory, but no, do you know something you said there? It's very, very interesting. Something you said about, I could be sort of heavier on the scales, but actually I'm in a healthier place. And actually, my wife and I just came back from, we were back in Scotland for a while, and just last week, we took this photograph on the steps of the resort and the hotel that we normally stay at, and we put it side by side with like the same trip, because we go to the same place every year in January to celebrate my mother and father-in-law's wedding anniversary. And it's like 2 or 3 years, no, maybe 3, 4 years ago, when I'd lost a lot of weight. It was actually, interestingly, it was during COVID. I was caning the Peloton. My diet was on point because I was like working from home, and it was like all of a sudden. But if I look at myself then, I was actually almost quite gaunt and too slim in the face. And I put myself side by side. I'm like, do you know what? Actually, objectively, I'm in the best place in my, there's my AI thumbs up. I'm in the best place in my life that I've been in quite some time. I might be heavier as a number on the scales, but actually how I feel up here is every bit as good, actually, as it was back then. And also, actually, it is nutrition is probably the issue for me at the moment. And they say like healthy body, healthy mind, healthy gut, healthy mind.
Totally.
You are what you eat and all these things, right? So, and sorry, yeah. Final point, and I'll throw it to you, is the other thing you said. Honestly, deep down, I'm not that motivated about the six pack. I'm not too bothered about that. Actually, what matters most to me is being sharp up here. Because if I'm sharp up here, I'm great in every other area of my life. And actually, I've got a better degree of acceptance of what's going on down here when up totally. Here is good, right?
So. Yeah, so there are so many studies that are coming out now that are showing that that adding HIIT-style workouts to your workout regimen is showing extreme benefits to brain health and cognitive function. So that is, and if, you know, running isn't your thing and you don't want to really push yourself to, you know, max heart rate in a run because maybe, I don't know, maybe you have a knee issue or whatever, like get on a bike and do it. I think that there, if, you know, that's the other thing. It's like, what are your priorities? What are the things that are going to make you feel the best? What is most important to you? And then that's kind of how you can like plan your workouts. You know, I did post something recently about kind of a great all around approach. If your goal is, if you don't have a specific goal, right? So like, if you're not like, I'm training for a marathon, or if your goal isn't like, I want to do a bodybuilding contest, or if your general goal is like general, like good health. And like I was saying, longevity, bone health, like muscle retention, and just like generally like feeling good and being healthy, then I set out what I think is kind of like the ideal like week of workouts. And, you can check out that post, but I could also just like go over it real quick if you want.
Let's do it. Yeah, let's do it.
I think that if you do like a 45 to 60 minute, like high zone two, low zone three cardio exercise, like something that's like endurance style, easy jog, power walk, hike, a low impact, a ride, something like that for day one. Day two, you would have like either lower body or upper body. You can switch the days, but so you have one lift that's focused on lower body, another day where you have a lift that's focused on upper body. And I would say never usually more than 60 minutes with that lift. And you can kind of, depending on where you are in your journey, you can start easy, start with 20, build it up. But you don't ever need really more than 60 minutes. And obviously always make sure to do some warm-ups and mobilities within that. upper body, one lower body. And then I would say a third day that you can do like kind of a more of a like full body approach if you'd like something with that has compound movements, something that includes power. So, you know, making sure that you're doing that stuff like power comes from the ground up. So like jump squats or mountain climbers or maybe snatches or, you know, doing things, the compound moves that involve power. And you could also do like a boot camp style workout if you want, if you prefer that day. And then always including at least one day where you have a HIIT style workout. So where you do that, you push that max heart rate day where you really push 20 to 30 minutes of doing HIIT style work.
Nice. And that's a recent post that you put out.
Yeah. I think if you just, it might not make you the most like, again, snatched, right? Because we're not, if you're not going for something that's specific for like bodybuilding, but you just like want to feel strong, want to be in, you know, good physical standing, I think that's kind of the optimal way to just like do something when you're not training for anything specifically. That's kind of the great like base, in my opinion. It kind of hits everything.
I'll check that out, and I'll encourage everyone else to check that out too.
Yeah. And having said that, if you are someone who, you know, you also could take the approach of doing full body, both of those lift days, the lower body and upper body day. And if you're somebody who's interested in like training for like golf or something like that, you could just include movements that really focus on single leg work or movements that focus on offsetting movements that have some rotational moves or anti-rotation moves in there. So you're kind of specifically attacking those needs that you would have for golf specific workout.
Yeah, that's great. It's a few of my takeaways from what you've described there are something very holistic, which is going to have a set of universal benefits that can be applied across golf. It can be applied across various aspects of your life. But there's variety in there as well, which is probably quite important, I would imagine, as well. Because, like, again, I have a tendency, say, to, you know, just go big on a certain thing. And if I'm doing HIIT, it's like nothing but HIIT that week, or it's like I'm just majoring on cycling. And it's like you probably want to mix things up as well, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think it makes things less boring. I think at least, you know, for me, it keeps me coming back. It keeps things interesting. And you can also mix up the type of workouts if you just know you're kind of doing these, right? Like, for instance, when I said that, you know, one day where you have that like high zone 2, low zone 3 day for 45 to 60 minutes, like that one week could be a bike ride. The other week, it could be like a nice easy jog. It could be a walk plus run. Another week could be like you set your treadmill to a 10 degree incline and go for a walk, you know? It can really change, but you're still getting that cardiovascular benefit. You know, and then with the kind of split style strength stuff, it's, you know, it is beneficial if you choose similar exercises week to week, at least like for 4 to 6 weeks, but you could always switch it up. And if you're going, you know, the full body approach, it makes it a little less boring, and you don't really have to be so, again, if you're kind of going for general health, you really don't have to be so dogmatic about it. It can just be something that you're doing to kind of ensure that you're hitting those, checking off the box. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Well, we're just a couple of minutes after 10 a.m. your time, and I promised you I'd try and get us wrapped up in time to let you get going. But maybe just final thing is looking ahead, you know, 2025. Are you a goal setter, Selena?
To be honest, not really. I'm not a huge goal setter. I'm kind of someone who like goes, okay, there are a few things that I would like to work towards, and I kind of like to do the thing that's right in front of me rather than go like, oh, there's this like huge big thing that I want in the future. I found
so
that
you
just
more
kind
have
of
like a development plan, like iterative kind of like building skill.
Yes.
Rather than just like going after targets. Okay, I like that.
I just found that like in my life in general, like the most wonderful things have kind of happened because I've just been putting my 100% into whatever it is that's like right in front of me. And then a door opens up because of that. So I just kind of go, okay, what is the next thing that I need to do right now that I think is – aligned with my purpose or aligned with, you know, with what it is that feels purposeful and right for me. And then I just, you know, put my heart into that and see where it leads to, kind of, you know? So, like right now, for instance, and I'm guessing you're like, what are your goals for 2025? So right now, like some of the things I'm working on, I am getting back into my golf game because I had to take a hiatus. I had some like, actually had some issues with my back and I had to work around that had to do with childbirth, actually some pelvic floor things that like I've, been working on and sure. Now I'm getting back into the game. So I'm curious to see how that's going to be. I'm really excited about swinging a golf club again. I'm also going to be launching two, more Strength for Golfers classes in April with Peloton. So that's exciting. And I'm trying to think of some other things that I'm looking forward to in 2025. My husband and I are also trying for baby number two. We've been trying for the last year. So we're, amazing. We're going for it. I think, you know, those are kind of my focuses right now. It's like family and work and also getting back into my golf game and seeing what happens. So I haven't been able to swing, but I have been able to putt. So I'm wondering, I have gotten much better at putting. So I wonder if it's just kind of even out, even if my swing is wonky, because my putting has gotten so much better.
Well, hey, look, you know, putting's probably the part of the game I enjoy the most, like, and that's probably because it is a strength for me too. So, you know, enjoy that and really, you know, cherish that strength that you have. So the stuff you said about pelvic floor, intrigues me, because my wife was saying to me the other day how, you know, again, recently gave birth to our daughter. There are a number of mums who, we've met one or two in particular who are very physically active, really into sport. And it sounds like they've had a few issues as it relates to pelvic floor, for example. So I guess, you know, for them and for their benefit or any woman going through that, like, kind of, what have you learned through that experience that they could do to?
I'm glad you asked that, because I think it was something that I went into so blindly, and I was incredibly shocked at what recovery looked like postpartum. I thought it was going to be a lot easier, to be honest with you. And again, everyone's birth story is so different, so it's unpredictable. Some women might not have these types of issues, and also C-section versus, so it's like, there's so many different things that, you know, we might be going through childbirth. But I think the pelvic floor strength is one thing that's kind of universal, because just the pregnancy itself puts a lot of pressure on your pelvic floor and changes things, and your anatomy changes straight up. Your anatomy changes. Yeah. I wish that I had had, now looking back, I wish that I had known more about this and that I had worked with a pelvic floor therapist ahead of potentially even getting pregnant and throughout my pregnancy, and then to really get on it immediately after my pregnancy as well. When your pelvic floor is disrupted, the way that it becomes disrupted during pregnancy, and even more so if you have trauma, birth trauma or anything like that, or it is incredibly difficult to get back, or I even hate to use the word back, because you'll never get back to whatever it was before. It's just something different now. And so you really do have to be so considerate about working with your pelvic floor to ensure that you are able to move in the way you want to. So spinal health is a huge one as well, right? Because that support. So you hear a lot of people talk about mom back, and that's, you know, that lower back hurting, that's, you know, your lumbar spine usually, mm-hmm. like a lot of that, most of the time, that has to do with your pelvic floor and needing to strengthen your pelvic floor and to get it to a good place again, because so that your core can support your spine, and for golf that's so important. So I think, something that I would recommend is do your best to get out there and get as much information as you can and work with a pelvic floor therapist if that's possible. And if it's not possible, and like in the US, we, I don't think we actually have anything that's like state sanctioned or anything like that, but you can, there are private networks for this sort of thing. See if your health insurance can cover it. Like, you know, I 100% recommend working with a pelvic floor therapist or getting online and trying to find, you know, free information that can help you work on strengthening your pelvic floor, because that is absolutely key and crucial to your health and your longevity postpartum.
Great. Well, I mean, I know some of them will be listening too, I hope. And so, part of the cool thing about this podcast too, and I always intended it to be, that there's a core audience that listen to this who are diehard golfers, but I care about being inclusive and trying to share that love of golf with a new audience, with people who, like you, the once upon a time pre-golf Selena, but you know it's kind of people out there who for whatever reason will go, nah, golf's not for me, but maybe listening to all of what you've just said or parts of it will inspire someone.
Golf is for everybody
for sure. Remember to subscribe using the Substack link in the show notes to become the latest member of our Golf Yourself Healthy community. Our next episode of the GYH podcast will be released on Monday the 3rd of March, featuring Dr. Rashmeen Nirmal, founder of Golf PhD, a leading evidence-based golf performance firm. Before that though, on Monday the 24th of February, I'll be releasing the latest edition of Golf Buddies Aloud, in which myself and special guest Jack McAuliffe will unpack the latest golf, health and well-being trends, as well as offering our unique insights on game improvement, fitness, nutrition and much more. That's only available to GYH community members, so yet more incentive to click that Substack link and get subscribed. Until then though, always remember to embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.